Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
All week, all year, it's all college football on the Chuck Oliver Show. And I said that there are two lists, basically, that coaches fall onto. The first one is, give me a reason. Give me a reason to fire you. You're ornery. You're unpleasant. Nobody really likes you, but you're winning 10-11. Oh, you're not? Give me a reason. You went 6-6. You gave me a reason to fire you. The next is, give me a reason to keep you. And that has been Sam Pittman. Everybody loves Sam Pittman. Billy Napier, give me a reason to keep you. Just give me one. There's a final category you can get into. It's nobody cares anymore. And week after week last year, I was like, yeah, they lost to BYU, but boy, it was one play and it was close. And they lost to LSU, but it was one play and it was close. And A&M, they gave up a touchdown on an interception return and a punt return. And I'm like, what? Ole Miss and Alabama, every week it was close. Mississippi State, it was close. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. You have to win this year, and there's no other scenario where Sam Pittman doesn't get to keep being the coach. That's as spring practice is now a few practices in. I want to welcome on right now. He's the publisher of hogsports.com. It's a 247 thing. It's Trey Biddy. Trey, how's your Monday?
It's going good. Thanks for having me on, Chuck.
Yeah, I appreciate your time today. As I said, spring's going on. Talk about where the fan base is. Before we get, we're going to talk to the team and the new quarterback and all of that. But where the fan base is, and I guess the administration, because it's going to reflect that, they're at the point, do you agree, that there's no other scenario? You have to win games now. It's not going to be about context or details.
Absolutely. I mean, it's year five. You're coming off of a four-win season. You have to win in year five. I don't think there's any question. And, you know, Arkansas avoided a little bit of a toxic offseason. I didn't really understand how they were going to enter this offseason with the way things went last season, being year four in your money year, having a losing season. But hiring Bobby Petrino really curbed a lot of that for Arkansas fans, just the intrigue of bringing him in after, you know, 12 years since he'd been here last. So that's something that really has – kind of instill a little bit of enthusiasm. I would say it's cautious because Arkansas fans have been hurt so many times. So, you know, with spring football starting up, there's always going to be a little bit of extra excitement, a little bit of Kool-Aid drinking and stuff like that. But I would probably warn everybody to, I don't know, have their expectations, you know, moderate. And then if good things happen, then let it be a pleasant surprise. So that's probably where I would be right now.
Well, just talk any sort of early ideas, and it's early, but early ideas for the Bobby Petrino, Talon Green brew.
Yeah, you mean like what we expect to see out of them?
How they're going to mesh.
Yeah, well, I mean, coming out day one of spring football, it's been Talon Green with the ones just exclusively. So, you know, they've talked about a quarterback battle and stuff, but it seems like they've just kind of almost decided Talon Green's going to be the guy. And based on what I've seen, he is the guy. He is extremely explosive. He reminds me running the ball of Matt Jones. You know, he's not as big boned as Matt was, not as like, you know, big in the legs and hips and everything. He's a little more slender, but he's 6'6" and is an extremely long strider. I think that's going to open up a lot of things for the running backs. And throws a nice deep ball. He sometimes has a bit of a sidearm delivery, but he throws a nice deep ball from what I've seen in practice. And so I think he's going to be the guy for him, add that, you know, dynamic element. And, you know, Petrino, I can remember when he was here before, one of the things he stood out to me was You know, he feels like a good big guy beats a good little guy generally. So he likes big players. I remember one year every recruit he signed in the class was 6'1 or better. And he said, well, if you want to have a big football team, you got to recruit big players. So he likes big players. And Taylen Green being 6'6, I think he's probably intrigued with that.
All right. We'll talk about the actual running backs in a second. They have a new running backs coach. Is that right?
Yes. Colby Smith has not been officially announced. But he is, from everything we can tell, going to be the new running backs coach at Arkansas. Jimmy Smith was here for 4 years, two practices in to spring drills, ends up taking the TCU job. They brought in JaQuindon Jackson from Utah, a guy who's a hard-nosed runner for them, played on a bad ankle all last year and still ran for almost 900 yards. A former top 50 type prospect who originally went to Texas as kind of an athlete. Will he be a quarterback, a linebacker, a running back? Ended up settling in at running back at Utah, where he had a good career before transferring to Arkansas. I think he comes in as a guy that has something to prove. He's a really nice, strong inside runner, seems tough. So I think he'll be a good addition for him. I'm really intrigued with Braylon Russell, the freshman four-star running back they just brought in. This guy's got possibly the biggest lower body for a running back that I've seen. He goes about 6'2", 252, and this guy has some thighs on him and can move and pretty explosive. They got Isaiah Augusta back from last year's team, who is a well-regarded recruit who ended up starting the last game for him. He had 180 yards in the last two games. And so they've got – and Rashad DeBinion's back, who is their returning leader. So they've got a nice staple of backs. The question, just becomes, I'm sure you're going to ask me about up front on the offensive line if they can block for them.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask about at least one more question about the quarterbacks, because Jacoby Criswell is a guy that he's still with the program, right? I haven't missed anything.
Yes.
Because he's an interesting looking kid in, like, I mean, a teacup of what I can remember a play or two. What's the idea there?
Yeah, well, I mean, so far he's been with the third group, which has been surprising to us. We kind of came in here thinking, okay, they're going to rotate Jacoby Criswell and Taylen Green and figure out who this quarterback is. And the goal was to do it in the spring. But he's been with the third group. It's not that he's done anything that I've seen that's been like, oh, this is so terrible. He's thrown some nice balls and stuff. He has not been as productive as Taylen Green has been, and they've opened up the first two practices in their entirety to us, so we've been able to watch all the practices, and they're going to open up the scrimmages to us also, which is nice for our coverage. So but yeah, that's kind of a head scratcher, because you would have expected him to come in and be right there challenging. But Malachi Singleton, the redshirt freshman, has been rolling with the second group throughout the first two practices.
Okay, one more thing about that side of the ball, and you mentioned it. Sam Pittman's an offensive line coach, and he was, that's what he is. And even as a head coach, there are times you expect to see a guy's DNA all over the place. Will Muschamp, I mentioned this at South Carolina, I was like, he'll fix the safeties, if nothing else, and he never fixed the safeties. Where is the offensive line now after four seasons? Because Sam Pittman, I was expecting this to be just churning through and it be really the personality, and that didn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we saw when he was here before as offensive line coach. He brought in some big-time recruits up front and sent some guys to the NFL, and they had a good offensive line while he was here. I never would have guessed in year four under Sam Pittman that the offensive line would be an eyesore. And so, obviously, they made some changes. Cody Kennedy left, whatever you want to call it, and went to Mississippi State. The offensive line coach before, he brought in Eric Mateos. Mateos was with him as his grad assistant at Arkansas back in 2012 through 2015. So, they have that relationship, that background. Mateos comes from Baylor and has been around the block a little bit. He did some work at LSU also. But, that's change number one. Pittman says he's kind of going to be Eric Mateos' GA right now. We've seen him working a lot with the offensive line, a lot more than we saw last year. And I think part of that is because Petrino, he's just kind of got the reins of the offense, and Pittman's going to let him do his thing, which is what you should do with Bobby Petrino. Let him do his thing on offense where he excels, and, let Pittman focus with Mateos on the offensive line, because that area has got to get shored up. They brought in Fernando Carmona, who was a big-time get out of the transfer portal from San Jose State, very coveted offensive tackle. Keyshawn Blackstock from Michigan State is another good prospect. And Addison Nichols, who I think is going to either start at guard or center for them, transfer from Tennessee, who Pittman offered when he was at Georgia back when Addison Nichols was a sophomore in high school. So that's where that relationship stems from. They also brought in Branson Hickman over the weekend on an official visit. He's a transfer from SMU. He started 33 games for them, was an all-AAC performer there. And is looking to, you know, up the level and check out some SEC schools as possible transfer destination. So that would be a nice get for them. I still think that they need to add, you know, another tackle, another center. If it's Hickman, then that would be good for them just to get the numbers right, because they're a little down. They're at 13 scholarship offensive linemen. They had, you know, the guys that were starting at right tackle for them last year, both one entered the transfer portal and one ended up giving up football as just a redshirt sophomore, just kind of lost the love for the game. So, yeah, they've got a lot of turnover on the offensive line, and that's not the worst thing in the world considering how they played last year.
Trey, we'll talk defense next time, I promise you. But I wanted to know, really, as spring is now underway, where is the fan base? And specifically because Arkansas last year, it was a horror show at home, it seemed. Almost every game I was like, oh, my God, and that was at home again. The BYU thing that I started when you were on hold. I don't know, man. I'm looking at that Texas game, and I'm thinking, if you lay another egg, Ole Miss and Texas, this really is looking – I mean, we've talked schedule before, but this thing is lining up as – it's almost like a script for Sam Pittman to not make it through the season.
Well, yeah, and there's two bye weeks this year, too. So, you know, that Tennessee game could be a big one. You got early trips to, Stillwater to play Oklahoma State and Auburn. I think that's two of your first four games on the road at two notable programs. So, and then you get a bye week, I think, after that. Or is it Tennessee?
Texas A&M and Tennessee both at home, then a bye week.
Yep, and then the bye week. So, yeah, that bye week could determine a lot. I mean, that's some tough games early in the schedule. Arkansas, whoever does the scheduling for Arkansas, does a terrible job. The fact that they're playing their first game in Little Rock, and instead of playing in Fayetteville, and then ultimately your first real opponent in Fayetteville is Tennessee on October 5th. It's just ridiculous. I mean, compare Arkansas. Take a minute, Chuck, and compare Missouri's football schedule to Arkansas's, and see who has a better chance at having a good season.
Missouri,
just based on the schedule.
They added OU and Texas to the schedule and somehow to the conference, and somehow Missouri found a way to, like, you look at their schedule and you're like, that's doable. And you're right about
they're
the
5-1. They're 5-1 coming out of the gate. At worst.
Yep.
At worst. Yeah. It blows my mind that these two teams are in the same conference. And it's, you know, I'm not saying Arkansas would have taken Missouri's schedule and won 11 games or something like that. That's not what I mean. I'm just saying, like, just compare how these schedules are laid out and what a bad job Arkansas did. Because you want to get off to a hot start, and there's not many games at home, and there wasn't many last year. They went on the road for four straight weeks last year. Well, they lost them all. And look what happened. So just got to do a better job at putting a schedule together.
And if there's any fan base in the conference that's tired of all kinds of off-campus, like I'll say neutral site games, like the one in Little Rock and then the one in Dallas, I mean, Arkansas fans have had their fill of both of those. Trey, I appreciate the insight, man. Thank you so much, brother.
Yep. Thanks for having me, Chuck.
Trey Biddy, hogsports.com. That's 247, 24/7 sports. Again, hogsports.com. So, yeah, that's the neutral site or off-campus location. That War Memorial in Little Rock. And then you have the A&M thing. And so Arkansas fans are ready for both of those to finally be done. But at home last year, they had a 2-touchdown lead over Brigham Young. That I mentioned Mississippi State. Nobody cared. It was 7-3. That was the final score. And KJ was still playing. And you scored three at home versus a Mississippi State team that, I mean, they're running around doing what they can, but it was awful. And Auburn came out, and I mean, drop kicked you from the get-go. So it was just a really, really brutal slate at home. And I'm just sitting there staring at the schedule going back week by week. And the BYU game was just so tough to take because they had a They had a 2-touchdown lead, wound up losing by 38-31. Like, they just stopped playing football at halftime. And that's what it turned into. So, just an awful thing. It was in front of the home crowd, home crowd, home crowd, home crowd, home crowd. And now you look at this year's schedule, and you have Tennessee on campus, obviously, and then a bye after that before the LSU game, which is back on campus. You know, start finding somewhere to give a better impression to the home crowd. And then after that, it is, Ole Miss and Texas as well. So nothing about that sounds easy. And, again, it's going to be all in front of your home fans. So great for ticket sales and not so great for the coaches. I hate it's March 11th. There are two practices into spring. And this is such an assumption right now. Same thing in Gainesville when you look at, especially with their schedule on the back end. We break. We will continue rolling through this Chuck Oliver Show on a Monday.
The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Game in Charlotte has my attention. Chuck Oliver Show on a Monday. We have spring going on. There's plenty of stuff to talk about. But the Tennessee Volunteers have been this old, like, mustard seed in my brain past few weeks. And if you look ahead to the schedule, we won't play the one-loss game. If you look ahead to the schedule, there's a lot less reason to play the one-loss game in the expanded 12-team era. Get into the 12-team, and then we'll see where we are in health and whatever else. But week two of the season, they've got a Charlotte game against NC State. Oh, by the way, Nashville's getting a major league team, which means Charlotte isn't, which means that site right down the street from the big giant football stadium, where the Charlotte minor league team plays, it's as beautiful as anything you'll see in a major league setting. It's just a 10,000 seat or so setting. They would need to add 20,000 seats or so, and they don't have apparently any ability to do that, so it'd be a whole new crib. But Nashville's getting a team, so Charlotte isn't. So Charlotte, it looks like, continues to be in the minor league baseball game, but they got the big NFL stadium, and they host games like this, and Tennessee and NC State. That's not a bad neutral site game to get. In fact, that's pretty good in 2024 against the backdrop of a lot of those games going back to campus, hashtag revenue. So the sponsors make it better, and it's a one-off, you think, and so, boom, we'll go to Charlotte. Reason I got Tennessee on my mind is I think they're good enough to win a national championship this year. And it's not just a blanket, you know, well, they're good enough to get in the 12-team field, then obviously they get on a run and they're an SEC team. I'm saying beyond that, and specifically beyond just the offense. Now, the offense, I think, is going to look like a Heupel thing. I wondered last year for a moment, I was wondering if this was like an updated version of UCF, where I was like, did they figure out his offense? You know, and is that what's going on? Have we figured out Heupel's offense now in the SEC? A couple of trips around, and okay, we've got this. And you at least adjust enough to where they have to work way harder. I don't think that's what it was. I think it was just as the season went on, I was like, no, he's not even calling the plays. He doesn't have the faith in Milton or the offensive line or somebody, whatever it is. The receivers to do their thing, given the receiver core where it is from the middle of the season on. There was a reason Heupel wasn't calling the plays, the shot, like the deep flip the field, the shot plays as often as he was before then. Part of it was the quarterback, I'm certain, had to be. So that was about the offense last year. For a minute, I was like, has this thing been? No, it hadn't been figured out. The offense is going to work. And with Nico, the bowl game is not proof of anything. The bowl game is just an exhibit. With Nico, and I believe the reflection of what he is in the offensive line, the fact that they brought back all those guys, they paid him, name him his likeness money, and then they went out and got the big five-star from LSU. So they said, no, we know what we have. If he's healthy, that's the only variable. Nico plus that line, it's maybe, I don't know, best in the conference maybe, the running backs, which I've been on Samson, like you seem, you know what that looks like. Squirrel White's coming back. You know, yeah, he's the only one. No, he's the only one that you looked at that had huge, that we look at has a huge numbers from last year. Brew McCoy's back as well. Plus recruits, plus transfers, plus Dante Thornton, who's going to be healthy and productive. Like all that, the offense is going to work, man. It's going to hum. And when I say hum, do you know what that means for Tennessee? If the Auburn offense hums this year, 33 a game, man. That's fantastic. And then we'll keep going north from there. Heupel and the Vols humming on offense, that's like 44 a game. If that's what happens, Tennessee can win a national championship because they're good enough on defense to win the slate of playoff games against a physical opponent who wants to ground and pound in the fourth quarter. And there's your scenario. It's not about the offense. It's not about anything else, even on the defense. It's about drill it down to that one scenario because that's what they weren't able to do last year. For instance, Alabama. You have to be physical enough that in the fourth quarter when a team, a playoff caliber team, comes out and says we want to ground and pound and you don't get the ball back for the final 6:37 of the game, I think Tennessee is going to be good enough to be able to get that done. And so that means they can win a national championship, not just survive shootouts. Heath, what's up?
You know, the one thing about that Heupel offense, Chuck, is that he's only come back one time at Tennessee if they're down at the half. And so it just feels like he's that fireballing guy coming out of the pen that basically is going to throw it 102. If you can hit it, you're going to put it in the seats, but there's a lot of times you're not going to hit it. And that's the one thing for me. But I understand what you're saying about the national title. I got to see evidence that if somebody can hit the first pitch, that he can actually adjust and show something in the second half and fix the problem. We've seen Alabama last year, for example, come back on Tennessee. We've seen teams do it to Tennessee. But if Tennessee doesn't get to the lead to start, they're basically cooked.
Even in the best of times, that is the profile. They'll come out, I remember the Georgia game back, 2 years ago, when they're still kind of, ascending. They're like, open with the Velus Jones and the big hit. They've done that against Bama with the big hit. They've done that in so many games, big hit early, and then it becomes a little bit of a struggle. That is not made up.
I've just seen it over and over. And you look at Florida last year. Again, was Tennessee a better team than Florida? Yeah, they were. But Florida had the lead at half, and Tennessee could never figure it out. Until he shows me he has that second pitch, it's just hard for me to believe their national title good, even though I understand what you're saying.
All right, we got Auburn spring practice, and Hugh Freeze trying to get that offense humming again to that level. 44 game. Little more moderate. We will talk with Auburn football next.
Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Auburn back practicing. It will be a different feel, approach, etc. Hugh Freeze, it's a lot more him. He made changes, both coordinators in the offseason, various reasons, and bottom line is they have to get better production beginning at quarterback. There's so many things that they got to block better up front. They have to have receivers win at the line of scrimmage. A lot of opportunities for all of that. I want to welcome on right now from AuburnObserver.com, Justin Ferguson. Justin, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Chuck. How are you?
Appreciate your time today. I'm good. Spring practice resumes tomorrow, I believe. They had spring break. Talk Peyton Thorne. Start from there. How much better can he be? What is the feel around the program?
Yeah, I mean, Peyton Thorne's got some pressure on him for sure heading into this season because, Auburn just was not good enough against quality opponents last season throwing the ball. And Peyton Thorne's numbers really suffered when they played teams that were kind of bowl caliber. And, I think the big thing this year that Auburn is banking on is two things, really. Number one, can they add enough pieces around Peyton Thorne to take that step forward? And the big thing there is going to be a wide receiver, Cam Coleman, the highest-rated offensive player in Auburn history, signee coming out of high school. He's in for spring ball. He's making an impact early on. Bryce Kane, and the super speedy high four-star receivers in as well. I got Robert Lewis transfer. They've brought back some other guys. They've moved some pieces around that had strong finishes the last season of wide receiver. So they're hoping that you do that and you have an offensive line that's going to be pretty stable, running game brings pretty much everybody back, so Peyton Thorne could take a step forward this year. Secondly, he's got some pressure on him. He goes into the Music City Bowl last year, doesn't play well. Hank Brown comes in the fourth quarter, has a nice little cameo, and tries to, come into spring practice with momentum. They get Walker White, number five quarterback in the country, the freshman. So he's going to be the favorite to win this job, as Freeze said a couple weeks ago. But I think the thing for Peyton Thorne is they've tried to make everything else around him better and give him some added pressure with the competition he's got in this room. So we'll see. It's going to be a few months before we know how much better he can possibly get. But I do think the supporting cast and the pressure on him that he's just not going to be handed this job, I think, could cause him to take a step forward.
You mentioned wide receivers, and, I mean, some of them are freshmen. Some of them, I mean, not every freshman shows up early anyway. But just talk about what maybe the blue sky will be, because it has been, I mean, even when Schwartz and Seth Williams were winding up their time there, it wasn't a consistent downfield passing game. It's just been odd for Auburn fans. Talk about who may emerge this spring.
Yeah, the big one is going to have to be Cam Coleman, I think. And they bring in also five-star Perry Thompson is going to come in the summer as well. And Auburn signed this huge receiving class and made an emphasis on getting guys who can win one-on-one on the outside. You go to Hugh Freeze, is going to be more hands-on on this offense this year, play calling again. He brings in, his own guys, kind of just guys he's familiar with, kind of fill out his staff this year. And one of his big things is like, hey, we want to be in the RPO game. We want to be able to build off of that. And to do that, we got to have some dudes who can win one-on-one downfield. And I think Coleman is the guy that you would look at for that. I mean, I've watched him a ton in high school from right down the road here in Phoenix City. He's 6'4", got one of the best catch radiuses I've ever seen from a high school player. He's legit. And, top five player in this class overall coming out of high school. He's the guy to really keep an eye on first and foremost, because they just need somebody to win on the outside. They like, Jay Fair had a strong start last season. I thought Caleb Burton had a good finish last year. They have some other guys that they like. Obviously, Rivaldo Fairweather at tight end had a really good year down the middle. They just got to get some dudes who can win on the outside first and foremost. And Coleman's going to be the big name to watch, here in the spring. And I think early in the fall, keep an eye on Perry Thompson for sure.
Justin Ferguson, AuburnObserver.com. That's where he deals it out every single day. Go find him there again, AuburnObserver.com. Tell me the vision, what the perfect version of Jeremiah Cobb, like what's that role turn into? Because he's a guy who can catch the football a little bit too.
Yeah, no, I think they look at him as a guy that can kind of, be somebody. I'm not going to say 50-50 between, catching the ball and running it, but I think it'd be pretty close. They like to look at him as somebody who can line up out wide. They can put him in motion, use him in sweeps. He was really big last year and really effective when Auburn went to like a two-back set at times. They've got Jarquez Hunter. They've got Damari Alston. They brought back Brian Battee. They've got a lot of good dudes back there and running back that they like. But Cobb's a really good receiver, and it's something you go back to his high school days. He was a really big-time receiving option out of the backfield, and I think they'd like to kind of make him more kind of like a Swiss Army knife type of player. Even if Jarquez Hunter's the lead dog again in that backfield, Jeremiah Cobb, I think, is a dude who can move around and they can get really creative with him. And he's a big play threat. He scored touchdowns. He was a guy who scored touchdowns several times last season on a small amount of touches. Go back to his high school high school days. He was a huge big play type of guy. So I think he can be a weapon. He can be somebody for Auburn. In his sophomore year that, it might not be the guy who gets the most touches, but you can kind of divide it up between running the ball and receiving the ball, and he should be pretty good with it.
All right, Derek Nix, veteran coach, and he and Hugh Freeze are obviously really familiar with one another, and the head coach says, I need somebody I'm comfortable with and knows my language. It's Derek Nix. But I also started all of this with my characterization of this is Hugh Freeze actually reeling in some control here with the Philip Montgomery thing. So what is OC Derek Nix doing? What is his day-to-day, his duties and responsibilities?
Yeah, he's gonna do a lot of the big coordinating of the offense, and making sure things are in the right spot and kind of running the show. But I would imagine that on game days that you're going to see Hugh Freeze be the guy calling the shots in terms of plays themselves. I think he's going to be very involved with Auburn trying to take the next step in the passing game. He is the running backs coach, replacing Cadillac Williams. You look at his running, you know, the fact that he's had extensive experience as both a running backs coach and a wide receivers coach is interesting to me. I think Auburn wants to use their backs more out. You know, we just talked about Jeremiah Cobb. Obviously, Jarquez Hunter and some of those other guys have some you know, good receiving ability out of the backfield. So, you know, I do think for a guy like Gary Nix, it's somebody they're looking at that trusts, you know, that Hugh Freeze can trust, that knows the kind of language and can kind of do a lot of the stuff that a coordinator can do, I think, without necessarily, even if he's not the guy, just calling all the plays on game day. And, you know, have Freeze. You know, the whole thing with Freeze is that, you know, he didn't want to do play calling in that first year because he wanted to concentrate on recruiting, you know, doing all the other stuff that a head coach has to do. It didn't quite work out. So I think a guy like Nix is he's looking at him and say, hey, I trust you. You know, you can help me lead this offense and, you know, do, you know, basically help this team out to the point that, you know, if Freeze wants to take over play calling again, he could still do that without sacrificing, you know, the other stuff you got to do to be an excellent head coach in the SEC.
All right. So let me preface playing quarterback in the SEC. Seems like it's mm-hmm. a bit much for most true freshmen. Tall Walker White. He's a big, tall kid who has just got, a rocket on his right shoulder. It's a high school game, but I saw the pass in the All-Star game and like the kid standing flat footed and he was like flip 50 yards. Can he win this job? Because he's got a lot of physical skills, man.
I think he could, and I think, you know, it might be a situation where, you know, you might see Walker White more kind of towards the middle of the year for Auburn if things are, you know, don't get off to a good start on offense. I think that might be probably more likely than necessarily him being the day one starter for Auburn, but he's definitely got all the tools. This is a quarterback that he said the ball just jumps out of his hand when he throws it. I got to watch him up close a couple weeks ago for Edison, and it was just like, okay, wow, it's got a different kind of zip to it. He also is a pretty good runner, good decision maker. He ran a lot of zone read and kind of RPO stuff in high school, and I think that's why Hugh Freeze really, you know, went all out to kind of get him to be his, you know, first big quarterback he signed out of high school at Auburn, because I think he's a great fit for the system. It's just, you know, when you're playing, when your biggest competition is a guy who's a fifth year guy, you know, there's a lot of that experience and that, you know, no knowledge of this system and this scheme and what to do at the college level, it's hard to overcome. So I think he's got a ton of ability. I think this spring's going to be big for him to kind of get his feet wet and learn this offense so that by the time he's in the fall and if it's still a real competition, he could have a shot at it. But, yeah, I think really, really talented player. He's definitely the quarterback of the future. And, look, Auburn knows the pressure's on him. If they struggle on offense again this season, I think they'd be more willing to kind of pull the trigger on him.
Yeah, we're talking about starting in the SEC. He's supposed to be at prom in a month. So,
yeah, exactly. I mean,
it's just a really, really different thing, man. All right, brother, I appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Chuck.
AuburnObserver.com. That's where you get Justin Ferguson. So, Walker White, 6'4", 220 couple, 220 several. And just barely 18 and still growing. And so he could be a big, thick 225-pound, 230-pound, whatever. He's going to fill out. He's going to be, he's already got a rocket arm. And I mentioned there was a play in the All-Star game that he's like, oh, yeah, that guy's open. Zip. I was like, all right, that's different. So it doesn't matter if it's on an empty field. The strength is there. Now, to hit a moving target against quality coverage, and then, oh, now you're in the SEC. Oh, and then that's an SEC pass rush. And I don't know if you have SEC pass pro. So you see where that is? And I know that you have some really talented freshman receivers. And as he said, like, Perry Thompson's not even there yet. Perry Thompson looks like an MMA fighter. He looks like a grown man. He's this big dude out of Foley who's going to show up later. And so they got four incoming freshmen, but they're all freshmen. Walker White's a freshman. Can it happen? More at wide receiver? Sure. It's a really, really difficult thing to do. And outside of those freshmen, you heard him talk about the receivers. Fairweather's an interesting looking guy, man, but not as far as like taking the top off something or getting really a downfield guy. Who is it? Jay Fair. Jay Fair had a good start to the season. He did. I played the over a couple of times, and Jay Fair was a good play. He was the one guy that you could look at and go, all right, well, he's going to get some targets at least. That's not what you look at in the SEC and go, a bigger-ish receiver who's not quite a tight end but is athletic and kind of get down the seam, and then a receiver who's pretty reliable and got open at the beginning of the season. Like, that was the extent of it, kind of. It's supposed to change. If it can with the freshman receivers, if suddenly we got some guys winning at the line of scrimmage, and that's what it's always been, get open, man, then maybe Walker White and what he does, maybe. And if they block, the running game's deep and talented and diverse and guys who can line up in different places. So Walker White is worth watching. I mean, there's just enough talent there. There really is. All right, gosh, look at the clock. We're going to break. We will come back, wrap up the show next.
Back to Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
Try to adapt and change based off of the personnel that you have in the building, some schemes that you want to introduce. You're also going to go through that process throughout the course of spring ball and training camp before you make final decisions, but you're trying to continually evolve in everything that you're doing.
Josh Heupel, who, as much as I was talking about him earlier in the show, I can just say that's Heupel. Tennessee head coach Josh Heupel, and he's talking about evolving, getting better, and they need to get better. The evolution of it, sure, everybody tweaks and adds even to their own offense when you have an 11-year career as a head coach, and I started with this one offense, and I just meander down this path, and I change it some. It's what you do. I have said that if the Tennessee offense is humming this year, and I picked a number, I said about 44 a game. Now, I didn't make that casually. LSU, with a Heisman Trophy winner last year, averaged 45 a game. So I don't throw out. They led the nation in scoring last year with Jaden Daniels there at 45 a game. Oregon with Bo Nix was second at 44. So I'm not casual about it, folks. 2 years ago with Hendon Hooker and all the other talent, Tennessee had 46 a game. So if they're humming, which... with the offensive line, which they knew what they had. It's why they paid those guys to stay. Usually, name, image, likeness, we're going out and bringing in guys. Well, they only brought in one. No, they spent name, image, likeness on the guys who are already there to keep them there. Then they added a kid, 5-star tackle at LSU. So they added him. They have the backs. They they'll always have receivers, I guess. Last year they didn't have, I say I guess, last year the idea was that especially after Brew McCoy injury and after losing Hyatt and, oh, don't lose the upchuck, after losing two receivers to the NFL draft the year before, that they just didn't have that same sort of get deep ability, the Bayless Jones ability from a couple of years even before that. And maybe that was accurate over the last half of the season. They average 31.8 per contest. It's one number. It's the most important number, what you score, what you give up. All the other stuff are indicators of how you get to that number. And so can they, Chuck, are you talking 13 point, right? Yeah, they can do it. And at that point, are they good enough? Can they play good enough defense? Can they perform well enough on defense? And they gave you the specific scenario because this is the only scenario where really Tennessee stood out in a negative way versus a lot of teams. Well, they gave up big plays through the air. They gave up a lot of big plays through the air. But in general, that's sort of college football. And when you want to play the way Heupel does, then giddy up, giddy up, giddy up, then you're talking about kind of some shootout, at least scenarios. And so that's going to happen. You don't have to give up yards on the ground. That's the opposite. Nobody's trying to overwhelm you, take back, storm back from two touchdowns down. Nobody's trying to get the big get even in the ground game. In Tennessee last year, again, specifically Alabama, are they physical enough in the fourth quarter? Look at Elijah Simmons, for instance. That's a guy I look at and go, I think they will be against most teams. And in the scenario of against a playoff caliber team in December or January, 6:37 left, that team wants to ground and pound, and the Vols never get the ball back. Are you physical enough to stand up and force them to punt? I think the answer is yes. And that's all it has to be with Tennessee, because the offense, they're going to be one of the best in America. I really do believe. It's not just Squirrel White. It's all the other guys I mentioned. So that's Heupel talking about how they evolve, and they need to. And I think that with Nico full-time, they will. Heath, what's up?
So Ross Dellinger is with Yahoo Sports now and is somebody who has been, I think, as much as anybody, pretty clued into what's going on with regards to the ongoing college football playoff negotiations. Dellinger saying today, quote, "Big week for the CFP, where leaders are socializing their revenue distribution model with ADs and presidents in hopes of an agreement on a new contract by Friday." And then the next part, Chuck, "Playoff format will come later." So in case it wasn't clear enough already what all of this is about, we're worried about the money. We'll figure out how we're doing the games, how many are on campus, does anybody actually get those automatic buys or not, how many bids for each league exactly. There's still a chance we could have five championships and nine at-large bids. That's still at least possibly on the table. We'll work all that out later. Let's just get the money split worked out by Friday. And so now this is going to be where the rubber kind of meets the road, right? We're going to find out all these different demands that the SEC and the Big Ten have supposedly been making. How much did they successfully get of the chips on their side of the table as opposed to everybody else? But it sounds like, based on what Ross is reporting, and I have no reason to doubt him based on his performance, it sure sounds like, Chuck, we're going to at least finally get an answer on the part that clearly is the part they care about the most by the end of the week.
Yes, the eventual dollar signs, how is that going to be split? And it's almost like you wrote a number down at the bottom of the page, and you're like, all right, get me here. Get me where the Big Ten, as a for instance, the Big Ten and the SEC are splitting 54% of the revenue just them. 54% goes to them. 54, if it's the same model, how 80% goes to the teams and conferences and all. Then you're talking about taking 54% of that, which is way more than two conferences would be in line for under the previous setup. It was like, what, 32, 33%? So they're trying to get the percentages worked out ahead of time, and then they'll actually work on, all right, well, at least we know the parameters we're working for and how you're going to get paid.
So we'll see whether or not that does come to fruition, really, but at least sounds like this week maybe it's going to. Also, one little thing, Chuck. The folks at Michigan are still adapting, obviously, to life post-Harbaugh. Over the weekend, word came out that Mike Hart, Michigan's running backs coach the last three seasons, obviously former player for the Wolverines, a signature player, will not be back in 2024. Now, it is not entirely clear what the circumstances are. He did have a health issue this past year, so it's certainly possible that this is something that might have happened even if Harbaugh was still there and on the job. But it does continue, I think, to up the expectations a little bit for Sherrone Moore in year one. I think people expected that he would have at least some of the existing staff to help him make the transition, and he does. But this was one of the guys who people thought would be there, and now he's not. And Mike Elston was somebody that went to L.A. that I don't know that people expected would. Sherrone Moore did a terrific job handling his situation this past year. But it's one thing to keep it between the lines when somebody else has already built the car and you just have to make sure you steer it straight. Increasingly, he is having to do a whole lot of work on this program in year one, and we'll see what that winds up looking like.
And it's all doable. It's all, quote, overcomable. If you even consider a running backs coach, we can find a running backs coach. In almost every case, you can say, yeah, we can find a running backs coach. There's a day night that there are good ones and bad ones, and good recruiters off of that and bad ones. But the dynamic that you had mentioned, this is more than just, you know, hey, Minnesota lost its running backs coach. This is more than that. And the cumulative effect is another level of that dynamic. Absolutely. So this is a first year coach who's coming off as perfect a situation as he could be associated with. And he is right back into it, retooling that staff again as spring is happening. So, Heath, fantastic job today. David on the ones and twos doing his job at an outstanding level. Folks, we're going to take a 22-hour break. Be back this time tomorrow. More college football conversation right here from all of us on the Chuck Oliver Show.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.